So we were in the... And okay, let me just remind you where we were. we had the most general Lagrangian for chiral superfields. I told you that it can be written as an arbitrary real function k of phi diagram phi, and the d term of that will transform as a total derivative, and w of phi, which is a holomorphic function of phi. The f term of it transforms as a total derivative. This is called the superpotential, and this is called the Keller potential. And those are the basic quantities in the effective n equals 1 supersymmetric axioms. in particular, I mentioned the what is the Wesso-Minow model, and that had, in that case, we had one chiral superfield, which was a we asked for a renormalizable k, and so in that case, k was phi dagger phi, and w was cubic in phi, and for that we found that once we write this in components, then we got some. Very nice, because we got essentially the standard Lagrangians for the scalar field and a fermion field. that let me just write for you. So we found that L was d mu phi star d mu phi plus minus a half, I'm sorry, plus I psi bar sigma bar mu d mu psi minus a half d to w d phi square psi psi plus conjugate minus the potential of phi and phi star, where the potential was equal to the terms f star f, where f were the auxiliary fields. This Lagrangian is when I eliminated already the auxiliary fields by their field equations, and that was all equal to dw by d phi square. And so that's what where we finished last time. So let me make some remarks related to this. I forgot to erase the rest of the some remarks. First is this Lagrangian L with n equals to 1 supersymmetry is a particular case. of a standard non-supersymmetric Lagrangian. Okay, so we can see that the several points. One is that, as I told you, the scalar potential is positive definite. It's positive semi-definite. So in that sense, it's a particular case. You don't have any scalar potential, but the scalar potential is given by this expression, and it's semi-positive definite. Second, if you look at the term here, d2w d phi square, remember that w was the term n phi square plus, say, g phi cube. So the d2w d phi square will pick, in particular, this term, and that will be a mass term, m times psi psi. So the mass for the field psi, which is m, equals, when you compute the same thing, this dw d phi square in the scalar potential, this will give you the quadratic term for the scalar field phi. So this will have, of course, we have to go through the minimization and so on, but in general terms, you can see that the coefficient of the quadratic term is also m. So this will be equal to the mass of the scalar field phi. You see, the mass of the fermion is equal to the mass of the scalar. We will be more careful in regarding this scalar potential in the next two lectures, because we have to go through the process of minimization. But you can immediately see that this coefficient is a mass term. Also, the Yukawa coupling is a term proportional to phi psi psi. Again, because of this term, you have the second derivative that will pick up this coefficient g times phi. The second derivative will give you a g times phi, so you have a g phi psi psi. So the coefficient of the Yukawa coupling, this is the coefficient of this, equals to g. But g is also the scalar self-coupling. In the sense that g multiplied the phi cube, when I take dw d phi, that will give me a g phi square. When I square it, that will give me a g square phi to the 4. Okay, so that means that the coupling of the scalar to itself is given by g, which is the same g that multiplies phi psi psi. Okay. So I will put here g phi psi psi, and the other one g square. So it's the same g. That's the important thing, is that this g and this g are the same. This little thing here, if you don't like it, I take it out. Okay. But we try to satisfy the customers here. The thing is that the coupling is proportional to g squared. There may be a factor of 1/2 or something, depending on the derivative. So, I'm sorry, there's a factor of 3 or so. But it's essentially the coupling is given by g squared. Okay, and all this is very important. Already, the fact that the fermions and the bosons have the same mass is a signature of supersymmetry. So if the minimum is supersymmetric, that's something we'll have to see. At the end, the bosons and the fermions will have the same mass. But also, that the couplings between fermions and scalars is the same as the couplings among the scalars. So this implies This is actually the source. This is the source. Of what people call miraculous. I don't know if that is well spelled. Is that correct? Yeah. Miraculous.
It's generally a C-U.
A C-U here. More or less, huh? Now it's, okay. this O-U, well, anyway. That's all right, good. Thank you. cancellations. In supersymmetry perturbation theory. Okay. In the sense that you have diagrams that will be completely different in non-supersymmetric theories, they, since they have the same coupling, they can consider to compare with each other, and they actually cancel. For instance, you have imagine that this is a phi field, so this is a G square coupling, and if you have the same phi field, but now coupled to the psi, this coupling is G also, and this coupling is G. So if the couplings were arbitrary, these two diagrams will give you completely different things, and actually they are the source of some divergences in field theory. But when you have these two diagrams, and together with everything else that contributes to two external legs of a scalar boson, scalar fields, at the end that gives you something finite. They cancel each other. The fermion part cancels the divergent part of this, cancels the divergent part of that. So, and that is at the origin of the fact that people started to say, well, supersymmetric theories have much better quantum behavior than standard non-supersymmetric theories. So this divergences cancel each other. And this is the reason precisely if this field is the Higgs field, so these are say corrections to the Higgs mass, for instance, and then that's a way of saying why supersymmetry helps to solve the hierarchy problem. The hierarchy problem is that the Higgs mass can be moved very, very high, to very high values. And in this case, it's getting, these cancellations help the Higgs mass to stay small. So that's something we will see in more detail when we discuss the standard model. But this is the basic idea that people had in the past, that all these cancellations in supersymmetry theory were helping to solve the hierarchy problem. Okay. Yes? It is possible, but it's not true. It doesn't happen. In general, there people had a hope at some point that this was happening in some cases, and as well, it may be that when you couple to gravity, that would be the way to quantize gravity in a consistent manner, that you start canceling loops in supersymmetric gravitational theories, and that would be a way to have a real consistent theory of gravity based on supergravity. However, that didn't happen. When people did explicit calculations up to some order of perturbation theory, they got infinities. So still, it's not completely proven for n equals to 8 supergravity yet. There's still people still doing some. Sorry?
I thought there were divergences happening.
I think, but it's not completely clear if they cannot cancel or not. They can be canceled or not. People say up to a given loop, then you're not guaranteed that they will not be canceled. And then there's this group Dixon et al. And I forgot the other guy, Dunbar, I think. It's not clear that they will be there. So it's something they were having some hopes at some point that even those, the ones that people say, well, up to these loops, there's no reason why they should not be zero. And still people were saying even those may be zero, although nobody believes that will be the case. So essentially, that's essentially an issue that is not under discussion any longer. So nobody hopes that this will provide a good quantum theory of gravity, any supersymmetric generalization of gravity. So it has some nice properties, but it cannot go all the way. And you can see when you go to higher supersymmetries without gravity, then the quantum behavior gets better.
Diagrams don't cancel, do they?
No. Okay.
Are there any situations in which it can, like Kolmogorov theory, where the tree level is exact?
Where the tree level is exact?
Yeah.
No, because we will see that the tree level is exact for a superpotential. The superpotential coupling, you can keep it. But anything coming from the Keller potential gets corrections. That's the solve of the problem. So.
Generic case, but there are no special cases.
Not that I know. The simplest case is that, no. I mean, I don't know any case where the Keller potential will not. Unless you go to n equals to 4.
Yeah,
I guess. If n equals to 4, then of course. But then it's very close to n equals to 1 now.
Okay.
Yes. So in that case, you can see n equals to 4 as a particular case of n equals to 1, and then that will get. OK. So that was the case for this Wessel-Minow model. In general, we can go more general than this in the sense that we don't have to restrict to Keller potentials of this type. You can have non-renormalizable Keller potentials. There is nothing wrong with a non-renormalizable theory, as long as it is seen as an effective field theory at a given energy. So, and we can have many, many scalar fields. So in general,
I said the philosophy of that is, if you're going to consider non-normalizable potential, that's fine as long as you include all possible diagrams that gauge that obey the gauge symmetry. Because if you're going to think of it as an effective field theory, all the possible diagrams are going to be generated.
Infinite terms.
Exclude, right? If you're going to think of it as an effective field theory.
Yes, but the thing that the good thing about effective field theories is that you can say I trust this up to this cutoff scale,
sure.
And then after that, so you start you can trust all your calculations and so on, and then you say beyond that you don't trust it. But before that, you can do the calculations and get information out of it. So in that sense, it's good. It's good to have a non-normalizable field theory as long as it's ineffective. So
all relevant operations.
All relevant operators have to be considered, but of course, since you have an expansion in 1 over the cutoff,
yeah.
So you can control your approximation, and that is the nice. Yeah. Good. Okay. So, in general, we will have k as a function of say phi I and phi j dagger, and w as any function of scalar fields. And when you write this in components, it will be very easy in the same way that remember how I told you when we derived this Lagrangian the other day. In components, we started with the W and then expanded around phi, capital phi equals to little phi. And then did a Taylor expansion, and that's how we got first derivative and second derivative because they were the Taylor expansion in the expression. And at some point we stop here because otherwise for higher derivatives you will get too many thetas and that will be zero. Okay, so that was what we did in W. Remember that because this is important. Who doesn't remember? Good. So you have better memory than I have. So. It's good to ask the question that way, because if I ask the question, who does remember? Nobody will react in there, so. But anyway. Yes. I have found grads, it's also the case. I'm teaching undergrads, and it is too cool to raise the hand. So you, when you ask something, nobody. Yeah, so you raise the hand, it's not very cool. So anyway. So anyway, so so in general, you have k and w like that. So then you say, well, how can I write the Lagrangian in components when you have a general k and a general w? So I do it for w. I essentially did it because I did it the other time without writing the w as a cubic, but I just expanded first derivative, second derivatives, and so on. For k, it will be the same. So you span around phi I equals to phi I, and read. So remember, for the Keter potential, the case what we consider here was phi dagger phi, and phi dagger phi was giving us the kinetic terms. Okay? So now for a general K, we take the term in the expansion that will give us a quadratic piece, like phi dagger phi, and the coefficient of that will be the second derivative of the Keter potential. So this gives, in components, you will have, for instance, the kinetic term. It will be d2k by d phi I d phi star j times d mu phi I d mu phi star j. Okay, so essentially, this is what you get, and you get this again this is from essentially the Taylor expansion. Okay, as I told you, around phi equals to phi. So this is very nice. Now you have the kinetic terms are not the standard kinetic terms, which were one, but now you have a non-standard kinetic term. This is usually written as a ki j star d phi I. And if you look at this, it tells you something. Have you seen something like that before?
Metric.
Very good. Very good. So this object behaves as a metric in the space where the coordinates are the phis. Okay.
Is
this star
on j?
Sorry?
Yes.
This index is j, yes. And this thing's a star. Yeah. Yes. Very good. So,
what happened to the linear term?
Linear term doesn't appear. In the defis.
No, I mean when you were expanding the Taylor series.
Yes.
A constant term, a linear term, and then a quadratic term. You've got the quadratic term.
Yes.
What happened to the linear term?
It goes away essentially. You don't get, because remember you have to have is the d term of k. So you have to see what thing contributes to the d term. Yes. So then that doesn't.
Isn't there on the d?
Exactly. Good question. Yeah. So, okay, so this is important. So then Kij is a metric in the space of the space with coordinates being the phi i's, or the phi i's. Okay, so, and this is very interesting because then you have a whole geometrical meaning out of the supersymmetric actions. That in the sense you have a, this is what is called a nonlinear sigma model, if you have heard that word before. So it's in the sense that the kinetic term, the coefficient of that is not a constant, but it's a function of the scalar fields also. And this has the structure of a metric. You may have seen that also in string theory. You have the string coordinates times that will become the metric of a space-time. So the phi's are genuine coordinates in a space, and the space will be a complex space because the phi's are complex, and actually you can actually define and work in complex spaces, but it's not only the space is not only complex, but it's called a Keller manifold. So the space of the phi i's is a, well, it's complex, of course. Keller manifold. Okay, what does Keller means? Keller, was a very lucky person. He got his name attached to something, so that's good. And Keller manifold means that it's a manifold that such that the metric is given in terms of a potential of a function k. So you're given any metric cannot be written as the second derivative of something. So for Keller manifolds, that's a property. So a Keller manifold is a property where the metric gi j star, which I'm calling, I'm identifying with ki j star, is equal to the second derivative of k . Okay, so that means that the whole structure of the manifold, the whole metric structure of the manifold, is given not by a tensor itself, but it's given by a scalar function. You give a scalar function, and out of that, you build the metric. So that is a very particular kind of manifold, and those are called Keller manifolds. And also, they had also good taste in his family, because Keller, that's what it's called, K is called K because of Keller. But it's also giving you know that K is giving you the kinetic terms. So the K works very well. Okay, so you always remember that all the kinetic terms come from the Keller potential. Good. And I will not write the full Lagrangian for you, but the whole Lagrangian can be written in terms of this matrix. So then you will get the Christoffel symbols appearing, even the curvature manifold is the coupling of the four fermions. So you have psi, 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 and the coefficient of this four fermions is the curvature, for instance. So it's a very geometrical structure within the supersymmetric Lagrangian. Okay, so I finished this part with chiral superfields. Now I will do vector superfields. So again, we want couplings of the phi i's, v's, and the w alphas. So for that, let's recall what we do in non-supersymmetric theories. In non-supersymmetric theory, we have kinetic terms, for instance, like this. And there was a symmetry phi going to e to the I q phi, q is a charge, and then we say, well, if we want, I'm sorry, times alpha q phi, and for if alpha is written as a function of x, then this is no longer symmetric, so you have to introduce d mu phi, which is equal to d mu phi minus I q a mu phi, where a mu then transforms as a mu plus d mu alpha. And this is the way that we know the couplings, then the Lagrangian will be dignify, dignify star, plus other terms, and then this is the way that the gauge fields couple to the scalar, for instance. That's something we have seen before. So that was, that is a step one. Step one, just introduce the gauge field such that you have the invariant kinetic terms, and then after that, step two, after that you will add a kinetic term for A. And that's given by F mu, with some coupling like that, okay? Where F mu is a d mu in u. Okay, so we're going to follow these same steps now for supersymmetry. Let's start with the simplest case. So K equals phi dagger phi. Phi dagger phi. And then we want to see how it it transforms. This term will not be invariant. Under the transformation, say phi going to e to the I lambda, e to the I, say q lambda phi. Because then for this transformation, phi dagger phi goes to phi dagger e to the I. Let me just be completely q lambda minus lambda dagger phi. Okay, if phi goes to this, phi dagger will go to phi dagger e to the minus iq lambda dagger, and then we get this transformation. So in general, if lambda is a superfield, this will not be invariant. So what is the solution for that? Introduce the same way here. Here we introduce a gauge field such that it makes the kinetic term invariant. So now we have to introduce a vector superfield such that it makes this term invariant. So then the step A is introduce V, and such that instead of phi dagger phi, K will be written as phi dagger e to the I qv times phi. And then V transforms V, let's be sure, minus I lambda minus lambda dagger. Okay, so you can check if we add here, you transform now V by this shift will cancel this thing, and that will make this thing invariant. And that was precisely what we defined before. Remember when we talk about generalized gauge transformation, this is a generalized. Yes?
Could you explain what is lambda
once again? Lambda is a superfield, yes. So lambda is a superfield. Sorry?
General superfield.
Chiral superfield. So lambda is chiral superfield. I didn't say, I'm sorry. Yes. Lambda, chiral. Yes, sorry about that. Yes. So so the, then this, this transformation, when you go phi, go into IQ lambda phi, with lambda being a chiral superfield, phi dagger phi is non-invariant, and then you make it invariant by introducing the vector superfield such that V transforms in this way. And precisely the transformation of V and phi, this is what I had introduced for you as the generalized gauge transformation for scalar, for chiral superfields. Remember that I couldn't have written here just a standard function, a standard phase, because this will not be then a superfield itself. So it has to be a chiral superfield so that the product will be chiral. Yes, thank you for the question. Okay, so this is exactly a step A, as before, so that, that tells you that now the coupling, the kinetic term, instead of just having the thing that is playing the role of covariant derivatives in non-supersymmetric theories, is introducing this coupling of phi to the superfield V. And of course then, that will tell us how the chiral superfields couple to vector superfields. Okay? So that tells how chiral superfields and vector superfields couple, in the same way that the covariant derivatives was telling us how the scalar fields couple to vector fields. Okay, so that's step A. Then B, we have to add a kinetic term for V. And since we know that we have this field strength superfield W alpha, so then the L kinetic will be just proportional to W alpha W alpha. Since W is chiral, this is also chiral, and to make that into a Lagrangian, there has to be taken the F term of that. Okay. So. Okay, so it's essentially, this is going to generalize the F mu nu piece that we have, and times some coupling here. So in general, times the coupling. I will call the coupling tau. Okay, if we want this to be renormalizable, this tau should be just a constant. In the same way that if we want this to be renormalizable, this has to be a constant. In more general case, this can be a function of phi. General, so a function of the scalar fields times W alpha W alpha F term. And of course to this we have to add a Hermitian conjugate to make the Lagrangian real. And please do not make a mistake that it is unfortunate in this field that there are two important things called W. W is the superpotential, and W alpha is this field strength superfield. So they're completely unrelated things. So please keep that in mind. But this is the standard notation, so we cannot change. So W alpha is field strength superfield. Something that I defined a couple of lectures ago. In terms of derivatives, covariant derivatives of V. You remember there was d d d acting on V. Okay, and as I told you, this W alpha, the reason that it existed, that we introduced it, is because it had as one of the components F mu nu. And then the W alpha will have as one of the components F mu nu, F mu nu. And this function, F, has to be a function only of phi, not of phi dagger, because otherwise will not be chiral, and we want the whole thing to be an F term. So, and this is an arbitrary function, and it's called, for lack of a better name, it's called the gauge kinetic function. Any questions? Good. So, in principle, I had followed the same steps that I did for the non-supersymmetric case. Just introduce a mu to give you the coupling between scalars and firm and gauge fields, then add a kinetic term. However, in supersymmetry, there is something else that we can add. That is allowed by all the symmetries of the theory. And so there's a new term in the Lagrangian that we can add. It's not only the couplings of phi and v through this modified Keter potential, and also the couplings of phi and f mu through this kinetic term, but there's a third thing we have to add, and I hope I have enough room in this blackboard to write it. So this is LFI, which is called FI means Fayet Iliopoulos, is by the name of the two people who introduced that. And this term is is something you can add to the Lagrangian that is allowed by supersymmetry. There will be a constant that I call this psi. Then I can have this v, which is the vector superfield v, and take the d term. Okay. So v is a vector superfield. It's invariant under the gauge transformations. If you take the d term of it, it's an invariant thing under gauge transformations. And they multiply by a constant, and that's it. Okay, so this is the Fayet-Iliopoulos term. So okay. So it's a constant times the d term of v, because v is a vector superfield. So the d term transforms as a total derivative. So there is nothing against that. Notice that this will be true only if the corresponding gauge theory is a U1. If you have a non-abelian gauge theory, then the d term of the vector superfield will not be invariant, because it will transform under the abelian non-abelian transformations. So then this is only there for U1 gauge theories. Okay. So now we can put everything together. We have all the ingredients to have what is called super QED. In a sense, it's quantum electrodynamics, supersymmetric, in the sense that we have the coupling of a matter to the gauge theory. So the Lagrangian will be then. So if you will write the renormalizable, just to. Will be phi dagger into the Q V phi the term. Then in principle we have, I'm writing phi, I'm not writing subindices, but we can consider many phis. So you can have a superpotential also. However, the superpotential has to be such that it's invariant under the corresponding transformation. So it's a strong constraint for the superpotential. So if you have only one field and you shift, transform by a phase, any power of that will not be invariant. But if you have several superfields with opposite charges, then you can make invariant couplings, self-couplings.
Excuse me, is it e to the qb or is it e to the iqb?
I think it's qb. It's qb. Because the v has an I in the transformation.
You wrote an I in
the oh. Oh, I'm sorry. No, this is okay. Yes, sorry. Yes, thank you very much. Yes, I'm sorry about that. Yes. Yes, so plus so this is the total Lagrangian. So in principle this is defined, say super quantum electrodynamics. Okay. As I told you, if there is only one field phi, there will not be superpotential invariant. But if there are several, you can have couplings between opposite charges. And so we have that. And so what is it that we have to do now? We have to write this in components. But I'm running out of time, so I will do it next time. So we start from here and write the Lagrangian in components. And then you will see how super QED will emerge. OK, thank you.